Last week we talked about Mary and her story and how she was faced with an amazing decision to listen to the angel Gabriel and the word he had for her that she would carry a child, though she had never done anything to be a part of having children. A woman who said yes to the voice of God. I have to tell you, that's probably one of my favorite passages. Be it unto me according to your word. I wish we had more of those kind of attitudes in our lives as we lived our lives, and that Christ would be allowed to be first in who we are. Now we're going to fast forward in the story. We're still going to be in Luke, so Luke chapter 2. But we fast forward in the story about 9 months, and we find Mary and Joseph. They're still betrothed, which, as we talked about last week, is like being married, but not fully married. But to get out of it, you would have had to have had a divorce. So it's just something we don't have in our culture. And they're going to be traveling a long distance. Now, I have to tell you, growing up, I never understood really why they did that, why she did that. I mean, when I was a boy, my mom had my sister. And I remember she wasn't the most pleasant individual to be around right before the baby was born. And then now I have watched and experienced firsthand 3 pregnancies in my household. And I'm not going to tell you my wife wasn't the most pleasant person to be around toward the end, but it was not normal life. Ladies, you know what I'm talking about if you've been through that experience. And so what we find in this story to me is a little odd. And then we also find in this story that the poor old innkeeper just gets pushed under the bus because he was such a sorry sot. At least that's what we've always been told, right? I mean, he didn't care about pregnant women and he kicked her out the door. Let's see if that really is what happened. I think there's some things that happened in this story that we have assumed. But when you really begin to dig deeper into them, you go, maybe that's not what happened. So look at Luke chapter 2, verse 1. In those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus, that all the world should be registered. Now this was the first registration when Quirinius was governor of Syria, and all went to be registered, each to his own town. First of all, I want you to see there's a call here to compliance. There's a call to compliance in this beginning part of this passage. We go from the acceptance of Mary in Luke's account of the gospel and her yielding to God and saying, yes, I'll carry this child. I don't fully understand it. I don't know how it's going to happen, but be it unto me according to your word. And what's interesting in Luke's account is what you don't find. You don't find poor Joseph going, I think I'm going to put her away quietly. I'm going to divorce her and I'm going to move on with my life. We read that in other gospel account, but not here. So is Joseph unimportant to Luke? I don't think so. What you're going to see here is a man who has part of the story, even when he's not mentioned specifically or very directly. And what we find in this account is a decree comes out from Rome that says this: everyone has to be registered. In many ways, this is like our census, where you get counted. Some of you who aren't old enough don't know we do this as a country every 10 years. They count everybody. At least they try to count everybody, which is probably a better way to say it. And it has certain ramifications on our culture and on our world. What happens when they count them up and they figure out there's more people living, say, in Texas than in Michigan? They take some seats in the House of Representatives away. We get more seats. They get less seats. We have more influence. They have less influence. But it also has to do with money coming back out of Washington, where there's more people, there's more money coming back out. But in Jesus' day, the registration wasn't quite like that. It was a little different. It was more like a one-way street. The people in the various regions of the empire, what would happen is they would be counted for tax purposes. That sounds like government today, doesn't it? They want to know where you are so they can send you a bill. And they want to know what kind of money is going to come in from those regions. And they would have that cash coming in. But there was no military component to the process. And we're going to get to the point here, and so hang in there with me. The registration of the Jews didn't have anything to do with military service. They were exempted from serving. They didn't have to go because of their religious objection. Now, what the people who lived in the empire had to do, apparently, was this. And this is where it gets a little interesting. They had to go to their own town. Now, stop with me for a minute. Joseph was from Nazareth. He lived in Nazareth. He had a business in Nazareth. Y'all with me? He's a Nazarite. Not Nazarite in the sense of the vow, but he was from, he was Nazarene. That's the word, yeah. A different word. Real close. He was a Nazarene. And so why in the world do we find him picking up with an 8-plus-month pregnant betrothed wife and traveling close to 90 miles? Probably by foot. The picture always has him on a donkey, but they probably didn't have a donkey. They're walking. And by the way, there wasn't a super highway to walk down. It was a mountainous region that they had to walk through, up and down hills and over the way. It wasn't easy. So Joseph is faced in this moment with a decision. What's he going to do? You go, well, does he have a choice? Listen, we always got choices in life, right? Just because the government says you have to do something doesn't mean you have to do it. Right? But there will be consequences if you choose not to do it, okay? I mean, it's like there's a sign on the freeway that says a certain number, and you can go up to that number and not over. You can go over that number if you choose to. But if a guy with a black and white car notices you, there may be consequences to your action. Joseph is in the same situation. Now, we noted last week Joseph lived in Nazareth. He still does. His hometown, though, is Bethlehem. If you remember last week, we talked a little bit about the idea of Jewish individuals from the tribe of Judah moving north to claim land, to possess the land, to reclaim the land for their people. And I think that Nazareth was basically a western, not a shoot-em-up kind of town, but a frontier town that these people, because of their religious beliefs, have moved there to possess that area, to take control of it and say, see, it's our land. That's how they do it in the Middle East. So this registration process has been ordered by Caesar during a time of a guy named Quirinius, who's governor of Syria. Now you're going, why is he going to all this history? I don't know. I think it's interesting, and I think there's a point when we get to in just a second. Some have tried to make a big deal about this guy Quirinius. They say, well, but history says he lived about 10 years after Joseph would have lived when Jesus was born. See, that's a mistake in the Bible. It's not. It says he's a governor. You know, you can also translate that word as a high-ranking official. He could have been a secondary leader in his government at the time it was done. We don't know exactly. I believe someday archaeology is going to find the answer to that one and clear it out that the Bible was right all along. But anyway, here's the deal. Regardless of the consequence, the essence of the text is here. There's a call that comes down from government that says, you have to do this. You have to be counted. But here's what I want you to notice. For Joseph to comply with this is this. There's going to be a problem. He's got to make a decision. How's he going to get there? Who's going to go? What's going to happen? How's he going to comply? What's he going to be a part of? And it also shows us a bit of a man who is the one who raises Jesus, a man who is honorable. He says, the government's asked me to do this. It doesn't go against my personal beliefs and the positions I hold. Therefore, I'm going to comply and be a part of this. So he's going to make an 80-plus mile journey when he heads down that way. Here's what I want you to notice. How you live, what you do, what you don't do, how you live shows your heart. It shows who you are. It shows your character. You're going, well, but I can say, you can say all you want to in life. You can sit back and have your positions, and you can pontificate and go, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this. But at the end of the day, what you actually do shows what is actually in your heart. Joseph shows us this. He's a man who's honorable. Now, he's not a central character for Luke's story at all, but he does appear here. And what we know of him, he's probably a little older than Mary. He's already either established in his business or he's in the process of doing it. He's a man who was likely involved in the synagogue because that's what men did in that day, in that culture. And here's what I want you to see. What he does here reflects his character, reflects his heart. Understand, you can say all you want, share all your intentions, talk about all the things, but at the end of the day, what you do is really what's in your heart. You've heard this quote before. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. What's in your heart is who you are. So if you're going to affect the quality of your life, how are you going to affect that? Well, I think I'll just put a position paper together and I'll talk about what I could do. No, at the end of the day, you're going to have to start to change what's on the inside, change the thinking in your mind and in your heart, change the direction of your life, begin to direct your ways toward God instead of away from it. Think about this. Joseph lived in a very small village in the middle of nowhere. Could he have gotten away with not going? Probably. I don't think that was ever an option for him. He said, I've got to do the right thing because that's who I am. That's what I want you to see this morning. You know, the reason you do the things you do is because it's who you are. You may go, well, I don't like what I did. Well, you basically are saying you don't like who you are. So why not change who you are? Change your direction, change your mind, change your thought. Let God change your heart and transform your soul to be a one who reflects God instead. So there's a call for compliance. Second, there's a cause for concern. There's a lot in this passage. We could have probably had two Sundays in just these seven verses, but we're not. There's a cause here for concern. Look at verse 4. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, from the town of Nazareth, to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be registered with Mary, his betrothed, who is with child. Now, if you're not careful, you'll blow past that and go, man, they went. There's more than that there. I want you to see this. So the call here is to comply has been given. Joseph says, we're going to go. Now they're faced with another decision. Joseph's going. Why? Because his character is, I'm going to be honorable with my actions, therefore I'm going to go and do what the government's asked me to do. Now he's faced with a second decision, and it's this. Does Mary go or not? Well, you go, well, of course she has to go. The Bible says what? That the Messiah would be born in Bethlehem, and so she has to go. Did she know that? Maybe. I think it factors in. But at the end of the day, there's a more difficult decision on the horizon for this couple. To you and I, we go, well, of course she went. Husbands and wives travel together. If they're going to go be counted, they all go together. I got to tell you, ladies, I apologize if you don't like this, but it's the way it was in the ancient world. Women didn't count. Aren't you glad we don't live in those days? Often, listen, women, you didn't even get counted in the census. And if you did, it was a very unique, specific reason you had to even be a part of it. So that tells me this. Joseph could have gone by himself, come back, taking care of the business. So why did he take her with him? Mary's how many months pregnant? Ladies, help me out here. 8+, okay? Any of you want to draw 90 miles at 8+ months? I can probably get the lady in the choir. None of them are going to bite on this one. They're going, no, I ain't doing that. Right? I mean, yeah, exactly. I got to tell you, if I was her husband, I wouldn't want to walk with her that far. Okay? It is what it is, okay? I'm not casting stones, ladies. I'm just telling you, it wouldn't be pleasant for anybody. So why do they do it? There's a big concern here, and I want you to see this because I think it helps fill out the picture of what's going on in their lives as individuals into which God has sent his son to be born, to be raised by a couple who are more than just two people. One's a very honorable man, and the other is a woman who understands life. Look what's going on here. We talked last week a little bit about this little village, Nazareth. I think it's a town of maybe 100, 120 at the time. It's still not a huge town today. It's bigger than 120. But it's made up of people who are very religious, very spiritual, very committed to the Old Testament law, very committed to the Torah. And most likely they've been transplanted from down in Judea and into this area. They've got this commitment and they're trying to repossess the land. And so when Mary becomes pregnant, hang in there with me because we live in a different world than they do. When Mary becomes pregnant and is not married, she is labeled what? Oh, I don't like that, do you? You know what she was doing? She got pregnant. That's what the community thought. That's what everyone... In fact, it shows up later in life when they even question Jesus' parentage. In another passage in the New Testament, they go, oh, you know, we're not even really sure. I'm paraphrasing. We're not even really sure who his daddy is. And you're going, well, what's it matter? Listen, we live in 2014 North America. We are much more tolerant than the people who lived under the Torah, especially those committed to the law. So what's going on in this story is basically this, I think. I want you to see this. Is Mary is faced with a decision. Joseph is faced with a decision. If Joseph leaves town, where does that leave Mary? 8+ months pregnant. Any of you done any karate moves at 8.5 months pregnant? You get a mob going in a community that says, enough, she is a sinner. We don't want that in our community, and we'll take her out. You're going, I've never thought about that. I think the reason she went is because there's a major concern here that if she stayed, she might not be alive when he got back. That she might be gone. Yes, there's a connection in the Bible. I understand that God's working through all of this, but I want you to see the human side of this, because into this is a woman who has to make a decision. And here's what I want to challenge you with to think. I want to challenge you to be a person who does this, that uses your head when you're faced with a tough decision. You're going, huh? What do you mean, use my head? Hang in there with me. Joseph is faced with a difficult situation. He has been ordered by the government to be registered. He has a responsibility for a betrothed wife. What's he going to do? You could say he's between the proverbial rock and a hard place, because either pathway forward has difficulties. If he ignores the government, he's in trouble. If he leaves Mary, she's in trouble and faces possible retribution. And understand that life is full of decisions. If you haven't noticed, you'll figure it out. If you open this door, all of those other doors are closed. If you go down this pathway, all of those other pathways are no longer available. Life is about decisions. It's the way it is. And they're human, and they're faced decisions. And what I want you to see in this circumstances is this. You could say, well, I'll just let my heart lead me. Can I remind you of a biblical passage? Our hearts are deceitfully wicked. Our heart is not usually the best place to start making a decision. So if you can't rely on your heart, what do? I think Joseph gives us an example here. If one pathway is going to cause you problems and another pathway is going to cause serious problems for your family, what do? You use your mind and say, God, show me the path. You don't go, oh, well, my heart feels this. This is what my heart will go on, and I'll be good, and I'll handle it. No, ask the Lord to show you. I think what happened in here and implied in this story is this. Joseph stopped and says, if I leave, she's in trouble. If I stay, I'm in trouble. God, show us what to do. And God opened the door. And I want you to understand this morning, if you'll ask God to show you the path forward, if you'll ask him to reveal to you what he has for you, he'll show you. And you can use these concerns to take a step forward. One more thought I want you to see. While there was a call to compliance and a cause for concern, there's also a circumstance to celebrate. Look at verse 6 and 7. And while they were there, that means Bethlehem, the time came for her to give birth. And she gave birth to her firstborn son, wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the end. Finally, we see the arrival of baby Jesus. While they're down in Bethlehem, about 90 miles, 80 to 90 miles, depending on the route you take, from their hometown, the moment is about to happen. Ladies, y'all been there. If you've had a baby, you know what we're talking about. Things are getting ready to become very painful. You know, she didn't have an epidural, by the way. I'll let that one sink in. She also was going to be in a very vulnerable position. Guess who else wasn't there? Her mama wasn't there. She is down there with a guy that she's betrothed to that they've never spent the night together at this point in life. She's about to have a very personal moment. Y'all with me? So what's going on here? Over the years, we've looked at the innkeeper and said, well, that guy was a sorry son of a... He didn't care about women. We ought to just take him out and flog him. What do you think? I don't think that's what happened. I think there's room in the translation in the Greek to look at it a little bit different way. And I want to just challenge you just to think about this from a very human standpoint. Now, Mary, teenager, in their culture, life was different. I guarantee you she had probably been around at least a number of women who have been delivering babies. She knew what it looked like. She knew, not from personal experience, but from conversations, of the pain and the difficulty that she's about to go through. Add to this the reality there was no Hilton in Bethlehem. They had one place for travelers, where a place where caravans would come and people would stay overnight and they'd move on. And it wasn't a fancy hotel. So she's faced with this conundrum. Are you ready? It's this. If you're going to have a baby, ladies, where do you want to be? Somewhere private or in the middle of town? Yeah, that's an easy answer, isn't it? Somewhere private. And so here's what I think they did. They came. There was no real privacy, no room in the inn for this event to happen. So they start looking around. And they lived in that area. They had a number of caves. And you're going, a cave? Yeah. They would be in the hills of Bethlehem. These caves would get washed out as rains would come, and they would create places. There's evidence from archaeology of shepherds and farmers using these caves to store and to keep animals in the wintertime, especially when it gets cold. You're going, the Middle East, it never gets cold. Oh, yeah, it snows in that part of the world in the winter between Jerusalem and Bethlehem. Add to that, if you go to the Church of the Nativity today in Bethlehem, you walk in to this big, beautiful church that's been sitting there for about since the 300s. But you walk up to the altar and you go down, and under it and underground is where the burial was. The birth was, the site, in a cave. And so they go and find this cave to have the privacy they need, to have the moment they're about to have, to deliver the child that God had given them. She delivers her firstborn, just as God had prophesied so long ago. I want you to see this, and I'll be done. I want to challenge you this morning to trust God and His promises. Here's a young couple. She said, "Be unto me according to your word. I'll do what you tell me to do, God." We know from Matthew that Joseph kind of struggled with it at first until God revealed himself and says, "No, you're going to raise him." But they had to take steps of faith. They had to get out of their comfort zone, and they had to go to this place. I'm pretty sure Mary and Joseph struggled months together. The question of Jesus, the struggle of Jesus' questionable parentage would linger in even to adulthood with Jesus. Yet God had promised them this: "I'm going to give you, Mary, a child, and you're going to name him Jesus, and he is going to save the world from their sins." If you read Matthew, you find Joseph's promise to stand in there and be the man he needs to be. And what I want you to grasp here is the certainty with which you and I can hold to the promises of God. When he promises you something, you can hang on to it. You can, as they say, take it to the bank. It's real. It's going to happen. I wonder how many times we live our lives doubting God, doubting whether he's true, doubting whether he is going to come through or not. But you know what? Those of us who have met this Jesus, we in our hearts, we know he's trustworthy. We know he keeps his promises. We know he carries out what he says he's going to do. So I want to encourage you as we finish up this morning to place your trust in God. You go, "You mean for like religious stuff?" Oh, well, yeah, but also everything else. Say, "God, I want to trust you like Mary did, like Joseph did." Man, they had a tough situation. They had a tough choice to make. They had a tough place to go. They had a hard journey to walk. And I want to challenge you this morning, if you've never met him as Savior, this baby born in a manger for one purpose, to bring redemption for humanity, if you've never trusted him, would you trust him now and say, I trust you with my life? See, God's heart for you is this. He wants to fill you with his presence. He wants to fill you. He wants to fill you with his love. He wants to fill you with his hope. So what keeps you from experiencing his love today? You go, I don't know. Do you let fear drive your life? Do you let fear drive your conversation? Why don't you do this? Why don't you say, God, I'm just going to lay it at your feet. I want to trust you like Mary did, like Joseph did. I'm willing to go wherever, and I want to use my mind and my heart and my life, and I want to lay it at your feet, and I want to trust you. Because I can guarantee you this, God desires to move in your life in his time. Will you let him this day? Father, we thank you for loving us. We thank you for the privilege of being in your house. And Father, my prayer is for those in this room who maybe have never met you, have never trusted you with their life, that God, this could be the day they do that. Father, for some in this place who have done that, but Lord, have taken that trust back and said, no, I'll take care of this myself. God, I pray that they'd lay it at your feet again. Father, our prayer is that we would be people who trust you, who follow you, who let you lead in our lives. And God, we want you to be glorified through them. In Jesus' name.